Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thank you for listening to Sound Optometry. Just a reminder that you will no longer receive a CPD point by listening to this episode of the podcast. But if you subscribe and listen to the most recent episodes of Sound Optometry, you can gain CPD points. I hope you enjoy this episode of Sound Optometry. Hello, welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality continuing professional development for all UK-registered optometrists. You can gain one CPD point by listening to this podcast and completing the exercise on our website, docket.info. I'm Michelle Hanratty. I'm an IP optometrist based in Birmingham and an examiner for the college's scheme for registration. With case studies and in-depth conversations, each month we'll explore the topics that matter the most as optometrists. This is the second and final episode in our series, exploring enhanced optometric services across the four nations of the UK. We've been hearing how these pathways are of benefit to patients, practitioners, and to the NHS. Today we'll be exploring the services in Scotland and in Northern Ireland. To do this, I'll be speaking to Mairead O'Kane, an IP optometrist in Omagh, a town in Northern Ireland.
In Northern Ireland, there's only two hospital eye departments. Some of our patients, you know, you're talking, it could be an hour and a half journey. If we are able to treat that patient within store, it saves them a 3-hour journey, never mind how long they're in the hospital for.
But before that, let's zoom in on the service in Scotland. To understand the system from a patient's perspective, one of our producers, Dr. Hilary Guite, spoke to a patient who's all too familiar with the enhanced services in Scotland.
My name is Doug Gold. I'm age 65. I live in West Hill, just outside Aberdeen. I wear RGP lenses. So I use my local optometrist initially when I get an episode of uveitis. I phone them up, make an appointment, and they tend to see me right away.
Can you take me back to the start? When did you notice that something was wrong with your eye?
Okay, this would be approximately 8-9 years ago. I woke up in the morning and my eye was a bit inflamed and sore. So I got an appointment with the optician. This was on a Friday, and they initially diagnosed it as conjunctivitis. Over the period of the weekend, it got worse. So I went back to them on the Monday, and it was then diagnosed as uveitis.
And you went to your local opticians that you've been to before. Why did you go to them rather than your GP at that stage?
Because my understanding was that anything to do with my eye health, I should go to the optometrist first.
So then after you went back again, just take me through what happened next.
Yes, well, then they diagnosed it as uveitis. They phoned the eye hospital, got me an appointment right away. I went to the eye hospital to get treatment, which ended up with my eye being injected to free up the pupil from the iris. I was then given steroid drops and cycloventilate.
Right. So did that sort the problem out, or is it coming back again?
No, it's come back several times. It used to come back about every 18 months. In the last year, I had it 4 times.
You could just take me through exactly what happened last time it flared up.
It tends to come on overnight. So I wake it up in the morning, my eye will be maybe tender and sensitive to light. So I phone the optician. If they can't see me, my local opticians will put me to one of the surrounding opticians in the local area for an appointment just to see how bad things are.
How quickly do they respond?
It will be within a few hours, 4 hours at the most, I would say.
So how does that make you feel? How secure do you feel in the fact you're going to be looked after?
Yeah, I'm quite happy. The only thing is, because I've had it for 4 times over the last year, the optician suggested I go to the eye clinic to see about preventative medication. So I was there about 3 weeks ago, and they decided it may be something to do with stress due to the pandemic and to monitor it over the next 6 months, and we'll see how it goes from there.
How easy have you been finding the process?
It's very easy. But the one thing I found out recently, which I thought surprising, was that when I went to the eye hospital, they had no idea of how many episodes I had had in the past year or anything. They have no access to the optician's notes, which seems a bit daft to me.
Doug, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
One of the optometrists who Doug would see as part of this service is Catherine Trimmer. Catherine is an independent prescribing optometrist in Grampian, northeast Scotland. Catherine is also a College of Optometrists Counsellor for Scotland, and she's the chair of Grampian AOC and also the chair of FODO Scotland. Catherine, thanks for joining me on Sound Optometry.
Thank you, Michelle, for inviting me.
Catherine, we've just heard from one of your patients, Doug, who used Scotland's emergency eye care programme almost a decade ago. When did the transition actually start when patients could actually go to their community optometrist rather than their GP or casualty for acute eye conditions?
Well, I think it all started when the new GOSS contract was brought in 2006, where NHS eye examinations were available for all. And that really opened the door to enable care to be provided in community optometry for acute problems. In my area in 2007, we developed a first port of call system so that patients would attend their optometry practice instead of their GP eye casualty. And that has developed since then to now the whole of Scotland being first port of call for optometry practices for any eye problems.
So you mentioned the GOSS contract or the GOS contract. So when you saw patients, did you have to do the full eye examination as defined by the Opticians Act, or could you just do a needs-based assessment?
Yes, well, we can do both. So it really depends on their presentation. So we have the choice of doing either a primary eye examination, which is what you described as following the Opticians Act, and a full eye examination, or we can do a supplementary eye examination, which is a needs-based examination.
And if you do go down the needs-based assessment or examination route, does the patient have to have previously been a patient at your practice where they've had their primary eye examination?
No, there's no restriction where the patient can access.
And so how has the service continued to evolve since those early days?
Well, we have expanded the number of conditions that we can treat. We've established much better working relationships with other primary care contractors, such as GPs and pharmacy, and also with secondary care, so that everyone's very aware of how the system works and patients are getting very timely care. Obviously, with more and more people becoming independent prescribing optometrists, then we're able to provide this care much more timely.
So in the case study, Doug found it relatively easy to get his treatment either through an IP optometrist or through an optometrist that was linking up with their GP. So how well do primary care services generally coordinate in Scotland? I mean, for example, do you share healthcare records?
We don't share healthcare records, but any prescribing event that I would make in practice, I would inform the GP. And certainly there's referral forms to be sent to pharmacy if we're wanting to use the Pharmacy First programme. So there is very good communication between all practitioners.
Mm. What is Pharmacy First?
Pharmacy First is where patients can access free medications for a number of minor ailments, dry eye, conjunctivitis and other things, without requiring a prescription from their GP.
And just moving on a little bit, the pandemic has clearly brought about a change in the way we work, and we've had to think a lot more on our feet to try and see patients when they need to be seen. So do you think there's an increased use of teleophthalmology now in your area?
Yes, absolutely. So when COVID hit, the hospitals were not able to see the same volume of patients. But obviously, with ongoing conditions like glaucoma and diabetic retinopathy, these patients still had to be seen. So funding was made available to community practices where we would see these patients, and we would have a teleophthalmology link with the consultant. And we would assess these patients, and the consultant would give the management decision direct to the patient. So they would visually see the consultant as well as being on a slit lamp with myself.
That does sound like a really good scheme to try and keep going past the pandemic as well. So what other conditions are there enhanced pathways for in Scotland? You've mentioned glaucoma already.
Yes, so it does vary in different health board areas at the moment. So in our area, we have the Eye Health Network, which is more specific to anterior eye conditions. There's the lens scheme in Lanarkshire, and some health boards have low vision clinics in community and also diabetic screening clinics in community.
Okay. Are there any further developments in the pipeline for enhanced optometry services in Scotland?
Yes, it's a really exciting time for optometry in Scotland. The Scottish Government have given the intention that they wish to set up a low vision service in the community, mirroring the Welsh low vision service. There's also going to be glaucoma in the community and an anterior eye conditions service, which is going to be similar to what we're doing in my area. That's going to be a list of conditions that we're going to be able to manage without onward referral.
That sounds fantastic for patients. And finally, how can optometrists that aren't involved in these schemes, that are listening to this podcast, how can they get involved?
Well, you would first have to register with a health board in Scotland. There are some mandatory training that you have to complete to work in Scotland, just assessing basic skills like bulk assessment, slit lamp. And then depending on the area you work in, you would be able to automatically do these services because they're part of GOS, and anything additional to that you would apply to your local health board via your optometric advisor or your AOC.
Okay, that's great, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. Every month, we'll be exploring the topics that matter the most to us optometrists, and that's where we want to hear from you. If there is a topic you want us to cover or have a fascinating case you want to share, email us at podcast@docket.info or tweet at Sound Optometry. Next, let's cross the Irish Sea and turn to Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland is the smallest country in the UK with a population of roughly 1.9 million people. To explore how enhanced pathways work, I'm joined by Mairead O'Kane. She's an IP optometrist at Specsavers in Omagh, which is a large rural town in the west of Northern Ireland. Mairead, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Michelle.
From your perspective, why are enhanced optometry services so important?
For a number of reasons, I guess. They are important for us to be able to improve our clinical techniques. We see a lot more various patients due to it, and we get that extra responsibility clinically. It's important for the hospital I service because obviously we're aiming to reduce appointments and reduce unnecessary referrals. But more importantly, important for the patient just to have that accessibility of care, really, especially where we are in Omagh. In Northern Ireland, there's only two hospital aid departments, and that would be Belfast and Auchlagalvin and Derry. So for where we are, some of our patients, you know, you're talking, it could be an hour and a half journey to Auchlagalvin. So if we are able to treat that patient within store, then obviously that's a positive. So it saves them all that journey. You're talking a 3-hour journey, never mind how long they're in the hospital for.
Yes, that's a really big advantage. What enhanced optometry services are available in Northern Ireland?
So the main one would be NI Pairs. So that's our acute pathway. So it's Northern Ireland Primary Eye Care Assessment and Referral Scheme. So really the idea of it is that the optometrist would be the first port of call for any acute eye conditions, whether it be painless loss of vision or any kind of red eye or flashes and floaters. So that is when the NHS provides us with a fee so that we can see the patient. Normally, it's within 48 hours. It just means that a patient can phone up with whatever their concern is. Our shop floor staff are very well trained to triage that patient, take the call and complete all the necessary information. And then us as optometrists will be able to decide where that patient goes in the clinic. So we normally keep about 3 or 4 free slots free every day for emergency appointments. So then we'd be able to decide whether that patient can be seen today or tomorrow. And the NHS also provides us a fee for a follow-up appointment that would need to be within 8 weeks.
Do you find there's much demand for these emergency slots? Do they tend to fill up?
Yeah, well, for our store, we have always had quite a large number of EOS uptake, and especially since COVID, I think with the pandemic, the number of NI Pairs appointments have just across the board increased dramatically. And obviously not all of them are urgent, but it might well be as simple as some conjunctival hemorrhage or just like a simple red eye or a foreign body or even like a sty. So anything like that, you tend to find that, yes, they do be filled up.
And what are the other local enhanced services that you offer?
So in Northern Ireland, there's 4 in total. So as I say, NI pairs, but the other 3 are geared towards glaucoma management and treatment. So there's LES 1, and it is IOP referral refinement. So that is when a patient has pressures above 24 on, say, the routine eye test, just with non-contact tonometry, then the NHS will provide us with a fee to see that patient back a different day and test their pressures using contact tonometry. So that's LES 1. LES 2 is when it's more of a suspect glaucoma patient. There's more enhanced assessments. So it would involve, obviously, repeat pressures, but also would involve your visual fields and your optic nerve assessment. And then lastly, most recent, we have the OHT monitoring. So that is for patients that have already actually been seen in the hospital, and that the consultant believes that they are a low-risk patient. They have known high pressures, but not risk of glaucoma. And then now that the hospitalised service are happy for that patient to be discharged back into community care. So that's a more recent scheme that's been up and running.
And are many practices signed up to offer these enhanced services to do with glaucoma?
Well, I know LES 1 would be the most common one. LES 2 and OHT is only available for practitioners that have the professional glaucoma certificate. But I think there's only a handful in Northern Ireland that aren't NI pairs accredited. But for LES 2 and OHT, then it's for the people that have the professional glaucoma certificate.
Because you're dealing with patients that obviously there's more than one healthcare practitioner involved with that patient sometimes, how are records shared?
So over the last 2 years, NICR has become available. So that's the Northern Ireland Electronic Case Record. So for me, that has been extremely helpful. So it means that we can access the patient's records from the hospital. So that's been very, very helpful. On the other hand, they don't have access to our records. So, for example, normally I would always just write a letter and hand it to the patient if I've made them an appointment for an emergency slot.
So, Mariette, have you had any feedback from your local ophthalmologists, if you can call them local if they're an hour and a half away, on the impact of NI pairs on the hospitalised service?
So I think the one thing that they've gained from these referral schemes and the NI pairs is that at least it's triaging out the patients that don't necessarily need to be seen. So the ophthalmologists, they have said that the optometry referrals are accurate more.
And you've mentioned that to provide some of the services, the glaucoma service, for example, additional accreditation or certification is required. Is there any other certification or training that's required to provide the Northern Ireland pair service?
So for NI pairs, it's a case of online training. So that would be how you become accredited. LES 1 was actually in association with Ulster University. So they provided the workshop for that. So it was a day for a practical clinical assessment where we got assessed on carrying out the likes of your contact tonometry. And then, as I say, LES 2 and your OHT is the actual glaucoma certificate, which is your distance learning. And it's also provided by Ulster University.
Yeah. And are there any further developments in the pipeline for enhanced optometry services in Northern Ireland?
At the minute, the main one is post-op cataract pathway. So the idea is that a patient that has had straightforward first eye, so say they've had their right eye cataract done and it all went very well, after they've had their second eye done, then we hope that the patient will then just be automatically discharged back into community care so that we will carry out the 6-week post-op review, and so therefore freeing up an appointment at the hospital. So we've all already carried out the online training and the accreditation for that, so we're just waiting for the final. I think it's to do with the trust and the Medisoft software for us to be able to communicate the treatment back to the hospitalised service. So that's the main big one. Hopefully that will be up and running soon.
Okay, that's great. So Mariette, thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you, Michelle.
That concludes our coverage of enhanced optometric pathways in the UK. But it's a lot of information to take in, with little quirks and intricacies in each of the four nations' services. To help me in summarising our series, I'm joined by our co-producer, who you heard from earlier, Dr. Hilary Guite. Hi, Hilary.
Hey, hi, Michelle. It's nice to have you on the other side of the mic, you know. So I worked in primary care as a GP, and that was a few years ago, and there've been so many changes in the organisation of optometry care. I thought it'd be a really good idea to round this episode off by taking stock a little bit of what we've learnt and what optometrists should take away from these episodes.
Sounds good to me.
Great. Before we dive into the specifics, I just wanted to start by asking you, why did you want to take two episodes to explore the enhanced optometry services around the UK?
Well, DOCET is funded by the Department of Health, and we do have a remit to provide continuing professional development to maintain and improve the quality of the general ophthalmic service provision across the whole of the UK. And since devolution, the four nations each has their own health organisation. So we've got primary and secondary care services commissioned and funded very differently. And sometimes even within the nations, there can be differences as well. So when we talked about enhanced services, I wanted to make sure it was relevant and interesting to all practitioners, no matter where they lived in the UK or where they worked. And I think it's also useful for people who work across borders as well. So for example, there's quite a number of optometrists that work in England that also work across the border in Wales. And there may well be practitioners who work in England who want to go and work in Scotland. And it may be useful for them to know what needs to be done in order to provide enhanced care in Scotland.
Yeah, that makes sense. So after making these two episodes with you, Michelle, I'm left feeling quite positive about how primary care services are improving and how they link up with each other. Is that your experience?
Yes, I think overall it is really positive. It's been a long time coming. I think the evolution of enhanced services has been quite slow in England compared to Scotland, for example. So they've got the community eye care scheme where they've got agreed management protocols for set eye conditions, and they've really harnessed the IP optometrists. And optometrists there are co-prescribing outside of the hospital eye service for conditions that are traditionally managed by hospital optometrists or ophthalmologists. But it is improving all the time. And I think COVID-19, the pandemic, the burden on the NHS, that really accelerated change. And the formation of queues in England really revolutionised patient access to urgent eye care. So I think it has been really positive, particularly in the last 18 months. But I think there's still a lot of work to be done. I think if optometrists could link more effectively with local hospitals, for example, if the infrastructure was in place to facilitate shared patient records.
That's really important, that sharing of records, isn't it?
It is. So it can be quite frustrating, I'm sure. We've spoken to some practitioners where they're able to see the hospital record, but the hospital can't see the optometrist record. And again, optometrists do need to have some feedback from their hospital ophthalmologists as well, so they can constantly look to improve their service offering.
So we're talking there about the hospital eye services. How do you think these services, these new improved pathways, are impacting on their waiting lists?
Well, I think the potential can be huge. I mean, if we just look at the example from Northern Ireland, with Marriott's practice, which is actually quite a large one, it offers 3, maybe 4 appointments per day for enhanced services. And potentially over a 7-day week, that's 21, maybe 28 appointments per week. And that's equivalent to a day and a half of hospital clinic time.
Yeah. I mean, I was amazed how many appointments get set aside and they all get filled. So these are really working, aren't they? So it's working well for patients. It's working well for GPs and pharmacies. But do you think it's also a really good deal for optometrists?
I think yes. I mean, from a professional perspective, absolutely. Optometrists have been historically underutilised as clinicians and very much used as a service just to provide vision correction. And so as a result, I think the public hasn't recognised them as allied medical professionals. But that's changing now. But additional clinical services do need to be funded somehow, funded privately by the patient or funded by the NHS or commissioning groups, depending on where we're talking about in the UK. But the funding is applied very differently from region to region. And sometimes there's variance in not just the service that's being funded or the service that's being offered, but the actual value of the remuneration as well.
Some of the nations are broadening their scheme out, so Scotland for glaucoma. What do you think comes next? Do you think that's going to extend out to all the nations?
I hope so, because I think potentially any chronic eye condition that needs long-term monitoring could be monitored in the community by optometrists as long as they've had the appropriate training and they're given their right support. And there is certainly an appetite for that. But again, it has to be funded somehow. So, for example, macular degeneration, I mean, there are monitoring services that go on at the moment within the hospital eye service. So again, that could be taken out into the community. I mean, cataracts is the obvious one. The checkup that's done after cataract surgery can easily be done in the community. And actually, the patient needs to go and see the optometrist after they've had their cataract operation anyway, because they need their spectacles updated. So it makes sense to bring it together.
So when I spoke to Ruth, whose daughter Fionn used the Wales Eye Care Service, WECS, she said something that really resonated with me. She said when she's got a tooth problem, she sees a dentist. And in Wales, at least in her area, if she has an eye problem, it's automatic to go to the optometrist. She was like, well, why wouldn't I? I mean, she didn't quite say it like that, but she it's so obvious because they've got the setup, they've got the training. It wasn't like that, certainly when I was a GP. So do you think it's like that across all the four nations, or we've got some way to go to make that more automatic?
There is some way to go still. I think in the past, people have thought, well, if I've got a problem with my vision, I'll go to the optometrist. But if I've got a problem with my eye health, I'll go to the GP. Or if I think I've got mild irritation, I'll go to the pharmacist. So we're not quite there yet. And I think where enhanced services are more advanced and have had funding for longer, so for example, in Scotland, where patients don't have to pay for any eye examinations at all or any eye care. So where the enhanced services are more advanced, people are starting to realise actually they can go to their optometrist. And it is starting to happen in England as well. But obviously we're not quite there yet, because the MEC service and the Q service is not universally available across England.
And where do you think these services will go in the future?
So I think the future is really positive. I mean, we've seen so much change in the last 18 months. And so I think now that we know what can be done, because of the evidence of what's happened during the pandemic, it gives us a very clear idea as what is achievable in the future. And that can only be a positive thing.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle. That's really interesting. And hopefully it's been useful for optometrists who want to learn more about these pathways.
Thank you, Hilary. If you would like more information about enhanced optometry services, go to our website, docket.info, and search for Sound Optometry, where you'll find the additional reading materials. Don't forget that by listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website, you can gain one CPD point covering the GOC domains of professionalism, clinical practice, and independent prescribing. We'd really appreciate it if you help spread the word about the podcast, tell your colleagues to listen, or subscribe to the series so you don't miss an episode. The producers are Jason Hoskin and Dr. Hilary Guite. I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thanks for listening.